So we are doing something that I'm not sure has been done in this country, and that is almost double the capacity of an airport while still maintaining and staying open. You wonder whether your military skills are transferable to the private sector or even the public sector. And I wondered about that as well until I realized that the transferable thing is leadership. I think it would still be iconic, but that those red eyes.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor, and I'm so excited about this episode. I am sitting in Denver International Airport with DIA's CEO, Phil Washington. DIA is the third busiest airport in the country and the sixth busiest in the world. Last year, 78 million passengers traveled through DIA, and as we've all seen, DIA sits on a huge piece of ground. It's 53 square miles, twice the size of Manhattan, with development going on all around it. So here I am, ready to talk with the CEO of this whole thing about the business of DIA. Phil, glad you're with me on ProCo 360.
Well, Dave, it's great to be here, and welcome to Denver International Airport.
Oh, thanks. It's I've never been in this building, the administrative building. Didn't even know it existed, really. So, So talk about maybe an overview of DIA. I gave a few stats, but you probably have a much better overview.
Yeah, Dave. We actually overtook the fifth busiest airport.
Wow.
So now we're the fifth busiest airport in the world and sort of the third busiest in this country. You mentioned the landmass. We have the largest landmass of any airport in the world except for one, that one being in Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
40,000 plus folks here. We have a very, very large ecosystem, I call it here. And it's fun. It's fun to work here every day. It's something different happening every day, and we love being of service to not just the people of Colorado, but the entire national airspace in this country.
Wow. So now, paint a picture of, like, what is really the purview of DIA versus the airlines versus the road folks, and, like, what is really your place?
Well, our place is really, we have I have a stakeholder wheel in my office that I look at every day, and I'm in the center of that stakeholder wheel. That stakeholder wheel talks about everyone in the ecosystem, the airlines, the United States Department of Transportation, the Federal Aviation Administration, our elected officials, the state, the governor. There's so many people in this system, and so we are a partner to the airlines, obviously. We have so many concessions here. And so we are sort of the landlords, if you will, of the whole ecosystem. That's kind of how I would look at it.
Well, and that's a neat way to look at it. Now, for example, Peña Boulevard, is that part of DIA?
Peña Boulevard, we own Peña Boulevard.
Oh, gosh.
I-70 all the way in, so it's a very long driveway,
yeah.
I call it. We own that, we maintain that, and there's a lot that goes with that. The way I like to look at it is the journey from someone's home all the way to the airport until they sit on the aircraft is our responsibility.
Really? So even the gates, they're all yours?
Yes.
They're all yours.
We maintain all of those, yes, along with the airlines.
And the parking, and now, do you own the concessions? I mean, that's rented space, like a retail outlet, right?
That is rented space that we rent out to small business owners for the most part. But we have a stake in that as well. We have about 185, concessions at this airport. and growing. All of that we have a stake into.
All right. We're going to talk about all that stuff in detail. First, I want to talk a little bit about your background, too. Like, how does a guy get to be there? But is it true you were really expelled from school at 17 and joined the Army? Or is that just a myth of Phil Washington?
I like to say that I had to do what I had to do. I am the only son of six, a single mother, grew up on the south side of Chicago. So there was things that I had to do to help bring income into the house. And so I worked. I did sign up for the military at 17 years old. I didn't leave until I was 18, I have a different background than most folks.
Hmm. Did you get expelled from school?
I'll put it this way. I graduated from high school.
All right.
I graduated from high school and went on to do other things.
To serve in the military and the Air Force, the Army, excuse me. Right. 24 years in the Army. You were also in Colorado a lot, Fort Carson, right? So what were you learning? What was your function in the Army?
Well, I started off in Air Defense Artillery units at 18 years old, isolated unit. There was something called the Nike Hercules missiles, which are the predecessors of the Patriots that you hear about today. Yeah. And went on from that to various units. And I ended up here in Colorado because this was my last duty station when I retired.
Ah, got it. So you retired from the Army?
I retired from the Army after that 24 years.
Cool.
And I happened to be here in Colorado when I retired, and I decided to stay in the state of Colorado.
Got it. Any irony between you working at DIA and starting in air defense?
Probably not. But it helped.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that helped.
And then you went to RTD as assistant GM and then ultimately as CEO of Los Angeles Department of Transportation Authority. Like, what was that like? I mean, to me, running an RTD has to be like brain busting.
Well, it was interesting. it was interesting. I had no intentions of getting into transportation, even though during my military career, I did a lot in logistics. And so I saw an ad in the newspaper when I had 12 months still left in the Army. And I saw an ad for a position at RTD. I answered that ad. And the individual who was a CEO at that time, who eventually I succeeded, was a Vietnam veteran. And he understood my level of responsibility when I was in the military. I was fortunate enough to be promoted to the highest enlisted rank that a person can achieve in the U.S. Army, that being Command Sergeant Major E-9. So he understood that level of responsibility. And he hired me that day. My only problem was I still had a year left to go in the Army.
Seriously, he hired you a year before you were out?
Yeah. I mean, I was, you can submit your retirement papers in the military a year out. And that's what I did. But I saw this ad and I knew I had a year left, and I was just testing the waters, actually.
Same.
And after that, I explained to the Pentagon at that time that I had a job and whether I could cut my year short. They told me I couldn't, but they could help me out with 6 months of that 12 months.
Oh, nice. So that worked.
And that worked. And that CEO at the time of RTD said, "We will wait for you."
Wow. And then you became the CEO. So
yes.
That's interesting. And then I want to ask you more about that a little later, but you mentioned logistics. And you're overseeing the Great Hall expansion, gate expansions. I mean, for those of us who travel through DIA, it just seems so challenging to do what you're doing while the airport operates. Like, what's your take on that?
Well, the first thing I would say is you got to put together a good team. So we depend on our team. We have a great team here, and empowering them to do what they are experts in doing is, I think, a good characteristic of a good leader. And so we have put together a great team. It is a daunting task to build infrastructure while while the airport is still operating.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like renovating your house while you're still living in it. And so we have been able to do that, and we are doing that. And it's just an incredible feat. And I think at the end of the day, we're going to have a product that the public can be proud of.
Oh, yeah. Now, before you got into this remodel, as you were living in your house kind of thing, like, what have you seen happen that since you got going, they were like, I didn't expect that?
Well, that probably happens every day at this airport where you don't expect this. I think it's well documented that previously, before this leadership team's time in office, there was a failed Great Hall P3 public-private partnership endeavor. I am big on after-action reviews, and so when we came in, I directed that we do an after-action review on the previous project that was not so successful.
Yeah,
we did that. What went wrong? How we can improve? We did that. We published that. We were very, very transparent with that. And we took that, and this team has learned from that, and everything has gone very, very well since that time.
Yeah, I mean, Phil, my impression is that as messy, well, not, I shouldn't say messy, as complex as what appears to be happening at DIA, you know, being routed different places and lines being different places. I mean, you're nodding, but I mean, some of those things are just unavoidable, but they do seem orchestrated. It doesn't seem chaotic to me.
Yes, thank you for that. They are very much orchestrated. We think about this every day. We have people on the floor directing people if we are putting up new walls and things like that.
Yeah.
It is very, very much orchestrated.
Have you ever been out there and said, okay, this is not, like, I'm standing here, I don't know where to go. This is not, like, do you ever personally say, this isn't working?
I'm out there every day. And I say that a lot. There is an app that all employees have where we can call in things on the spot if we're not seeing those things or if they're not working for customers right on the spot.
Wow.
It's called a CSAY app. And I'm on there quite frequently. And it goes straight to our operations and maintenance folks, our command center.
Wow.
And we correct those things right on the spot.
Well, I want to ask you a question about how much that matters in just a second. First, I want to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 4 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is a podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Phil Washington, CEO of Denver International Airport. Kind of a little different for me, but I was so excited about this interview. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, Kinsley Meetings, and Kinsley Meetings is ProCo 360's longest running sponsor. They're growing based on a great reputation for planning and conducting meetings with lots of variables. Phil, I think Steve and Allison Kinsley are probably some of your most regular travelers at DIA. Also, Via Technologies, thanks for hosting ProCo 360 and all the great help your team gives me around managing the website, Colorado Biz Magazine, we're building our audiences together, and Denver Angels, we're collaborating to feature great Colorado early and already successful startups. Go to ProCo360.com to check out these partners. And now, Phil, this is a question for you, and I don't mean it to be silly. It's really a serious question. J.D. Powers puts DIA at number 7 on the list of mega airports as far as customer satisfaction, and mega meaning 33 or more million more. But here are my first question is, like, does it really matter if customers think this is a good experience, a bad experience, flyers, unless it's like horrible? Does it matter if they think it's beautiful or if they're just getting to their gate?
It definitely matters. It matters to me. It matters to everyone working here, right? We want to make the customer experience as best that we possibly can. And that customer experience piece, it may sound trivial and, you know, you got millions and millions of people passing through here. But that becomes very, very important to us. And the rankings, the J.D. Power rankings and all of that. I mean, we don't do all of this just for rankings.
Yeah.
We do it because we want people to have a pleasant experience going through the airport. Now, having said that, we know that it's been tough over the last couple of years, you know, during the construction. And what we're trying to do is to be as thoughtful as we possibly can for people that is traversing through the airport.
Yeah.
But it means a lot.
Well, here's what I meant when I said, does it really matter? Like, unless it's a terrible airport people want to avoid, they're going to go through DIA anyway, aren't they? I mean, they have to. If you live here, if you travel there. Yeah. So, I mean, does customer satisfaction actually influence the success or lack of success of an airport?
I think it does.
How?
I think it does. I mean, a lot of people have options of whether they fly through here, if this is their destination. We have a lot of transfer traffic, and people can decide whether they want to transfer through Denver or through Salt Lake City or someplace else.
Yeah.
And so this becomes very, very important that the customer experience is one, whether they want to stop in at one of the restaurants or at one of the concessions. A lot of people make decisions around that.
I guess when you say that, that makes sense, because I mean, there are certain airports that I don't want to fly through. And I suppose if there are enough of people who share that opinion, then the airlines themselves start scheduling fewer flights through those and the whole
That's right.
So it would add up.
That's right.
How customers ultimately feel. Now, do you have, there's several things I wonder about how much control you have over things. Like, for example, security. Do you have control over security, lines, orderliness, all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, TSA, the Transportation Security Agency, is one of the agencies in that stakeholder wheel
that
I talk about.
Do you control how long the lines are?
We do not control their staffing. We do not control their operation. But having said that, we partner with them on the facilities to make sure that the facilities are adequate for them to operate within. And that is being a part of the ecosystem. So while we don't control that entirely, we want to facilitate a good customer experience for folks going through TSA.
So do you find them to be, it sounds like you find them to be a good partner, but I mean, as far as the staffing fluctuations at holidays and other things, I mean, that's got to be brutal.
Yeah, I mean, we have met over the last 12 months with TSA, and we have, for example, talked to our elected leaders, most specifically our senators who help us in Washington, to increase the staffing at this airport.
So it's a political problem sometimes.
Well, it's a funding problem.
Well, that's political slash funding,
yes,
whatever. Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just recently, we were advocating for more full-time employees on the TSA front at this airport. We had more FTEs or full-time employees with TSA in 2019 than we had in 2022. And so we made that very, very clear that, hey, listen, we cannot have the same amount of full-time employees with TSA that we had in 2019 or less.
So this is a weird question for me, or a thing to ponder, is the idea that, okay, you manage certain aspects of revenue at DIA, but the cost associated with the FAA and security lines and protocols and all, you don't pay those.
No.
But that's a huge expense.
It is a huge expense. This is a service. TSA is funded through the federal government. And so what we can do is talk about our experience, and we have done that. And TSA has been wonderful. The administrator has come out and visited about 18 months ago on this issue of headcount, and they responded and increased the headcount.
Well, I will say I've... in the last memorable, whatever, 2 or 3 years, I've really never had much of an issue with TSA. There have been a couple of times when I've been in line longer than I would like, but generally it flows pretty smoothly. So you must be doing the political funding dance pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we always say, I like to say that think about the time, not the length of the line.
Yeah.
You want to gauge this by the time in line. How long does it take to get to the front? Not the length, because you can go there and see a line that wraps around or whatever.
Yeah.
And it may only take 10 minutes to get through.
Good point. All right. Now, when it comes to customer satisfaction, too, I've been reading a lot about new kinds of concessions, new restaurants. I've also read, and I don't know about this, if this was DIA, but in some airports, customer pretty strong feedback about how pricing has gotten kind of crazy at airports. I mean, do you have any, to what extent do you control concessions, pricing, all that kind of stuff?
There's a formula out there for prices. I can't really, repeat it right now because I don't remember it. But there are parameters in terms of how much folks can charge, and all the concessions have those formulaic sort of calculations that we provide in agreement for them opening up a concession here.
Well, and let's face it. I mean, a bag of potato chips in to get one to the DIA, get it down to the gate, and have the staff go there. I mean, it's gonna cost more than at the grocery store.
It's gonna cost more than the grocery store. Oftentimes I bring my own bag of chips with me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what about things like, do you have any control or do you hear much feedback about other things that would be part of the customer experience, like access to rental cars, access to rideshare, that kind of stuff?
Well, I'll talk about rental cars. I mean, one of the reasons that we want to build a consolidated rental car facility. We have a rental car row out there that you see on Pinion Boulevard. I believe that we cannot be the great airport that we want to be. We're already a great airport, but we cannot be greater and what we want to be unless we build a consolidated rental car facility.
Which would be on, like, walkable from the airport?
Not walkable. It would be less than a mile. We are already planning this right now. And it would be off the terminal. And you really can't talk about a consolidated rental car facility. These are all of the rental car companies under one roof. You really can't talk about a rental car facility without talking about how to get there.
Yeah.
And so we are looking at a common transportation system.
Yeah, sure.
We have not designated what that transportation will be yet because we want to explore the private sector and see.
Interesting.
It could be a train. It could be any number of things, but we are in the early stages of that.
Okay. A couple quick questions for you. Do you control the weather delays? Who makes those calls?
I thought you were going to ask me, do I control the weather?
No, because that would be a silly question, wouldn't it?
FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, really decides, and the airlines really decide, what weather they want to fly in.
Yeah.
And so we play a role in that if we do have bad weather, snow or whatever, we probably have one of the best snow teams in the entire country. I like to say we know snow.
Yeah.
And so in terms of those weather delays, it's the airlines that's making the call or the Federal Aviation Administration.
I want to switch gears to talking more about the business of the airport. And I guess we've been talking about that too, but I want to know, do you have to market the airport? Do you, if a new airline is coming, is that because you've marketed to them, you've sold them on the idea of being a DIA, or have they come to you saying, we think we see an opportunity?
It happens both ways. We do a lot of marketing, especially for international flights. Sometimes airlines come to us. They come to us and say they want to grow more at this airport if they're already here. But we do a ton of marketing. Started new flights here, Istanbul with Turkish Airlines.
Yeah, nonstop, right?
Nonstop from Istanbul to here. We actually started with a new airline, Aer Lingus, to Dublin. And in those, we did a lot of marketing and we did a lot of negotiating with those airlines to come here. And we're very, very proud of that. Denver is a destination. It is the gateway to the West in many respects. Mm-hmm. So we welcome all of them in.
Cool. Now, let's talk about your revenue model, because where does it come from? What is it and where does it come from?
Well, let me say this. We use no sales tax here at all. And so we are an enterprise and we live on what we make here.
Right.
And that is through parking primarily. That is through airline fees for takeoff and landing. That is concession revenue, all of those things. So we are being that enterprise. And, you know, having said that, I think we are one of the best financially positioned airport
Why do you
in
say
this
that?
Country. Our rates for cost of employment, per passenger that we charge the airlines are relatively low. It's some of the lowest in the country.
Could you raise that if you wanted to?
Yes, it's a factor of what we're doing here in terms of our build out and our construction and our operations. But the fact that we are financially stable allows us to keep those rates reasonable.
But I mean, if I'm United Airlines and I'm coming to you saying, as I think they did, we want to invest $1 billion and whatever, we want to expand our number of gates. Is that part of a negotiated package on a per passenger rate?
It is that and a number of other things. We charge for takeoff and landing fees as well.
And that's separate from a per passenger thing?
Yes.
It's a separate takeoff and landing?
Yes. So all of that is factored into whatever our agreements are with the airlines, our contracts are with the airlines.
And do they all have different rates? I mean, somewhat? Based on their volume or based on something?
Somewhat, yeah. There's an equation out there that gets to that.
Yeah.
But we, I think we are very economical, if you will, as an airport. We have, over 2 years cash on hand for a rainy day, if you will.
Let's hope we don't have 2 years of rainy days. I know.
Right.
Well, okay, so there's some other questions about the money piece. So one airline might pay a slightly different rate per whatever unit based on their volume or based on their investment, mutual agree. If I want a gate really close to the terminal, is that more expensive?
That is a factor of the negotiations that we do. We just built and opened 39 new gates at this airport. You may have been to those new gate
areas. I have. They're beautiful. And are the closer ones more expensive than the farther ones?
They could be.
I would think so, because, customers would love. I mean, I don't like being I'm like, what the hell? I'm at the last gate again. It's like it adds 10 minutes to my outer. Yeah.
It could be. There's factors involved in all of that.
All right. Now, you make a lot of money on parking?
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
And I would think so. You own all the land. And so it's a parking concession. What about other concessions like food? Is that a percentage of revenue kind of thing, the way other retailers work?
That is a percentage of sales. Percentage of sales that we have. There's sort of an equation that goes with that as well. But our main revenue driver is parking along with the airline fees as well.
Yeah, which one's more? I would think airline fees are more than parking, but maybe not.
I think parking is
really?
The annual, and I don't have the figure in front of me, but both of those are some of the main drivers.
That's amazing. All right, expenses. What are your biggest expenses? There must be massive maintenance costs to keep these places going.
Massive maintenance costs. When you look at our asset management, when you look at the conveyances, we have over 300 conveyances at this airport.
Moving sidewalks, escalators, elevators.
I think that our expenses.
When the train,
I believe that our expenses through June, the last time I looked, June 2024 was like $300 million.
Months of expenses,
yes.
$300 million.
Yes. Wow. So yeah, we have this is a massive operation, as you can imagine.
Yeah. And okay, so if you're spending $600 million or so on expenses, your revenues are greater than that.
Yes.
Yeah. And plus, you've got to pay now when an airport is built or when you do this massive expansion or renovation and all that. That's all capital expense.
Yes.
Is that borrowed money or is that coming out of reserves or a combination? How's that done?
We have some debt issuances.
Yeah.
We have debt issuances. So there's debt. There is cash on hand.
And you can do that. You can take out money. You can borrow money because you're not a Colorado entity. You what exactly are you as a business entity?
We are an enterprise.
Are you a government agency of sorts? Are you a government enterprise? Or
We are sort of a government enterprise. I'll say that. I said earlier, we do not use any sales tax revenue.
Yep.
And all of the revenue that we do generate must be spent within the airport. We can't spend outside. That would be a diversion of revenue that is against Federal Aviation Administration rules.
Got it. So as an enterprise, you are, this is it, all contained, all encapsulated here at DIA.
That's
revenues and expenses.
That's correct.
All right. I want to ask you some more questions about what's going on at the airport. Seems like lounges are sort of springing up at DIA and other places. It seems like a trendy thing. What's that?
Airline lounges.
Yeah. Credit card lounges and stuff
like
that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, people want to do business here and people want to have lounges here. And we welcome that. With United, they have the largest lounge in their system here at Denver International Airport.
And they rent the space from DIA, I suppose?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
All right. What's something that you have to, as CEO, what's something you have to pay attention to that you, like, before you took this job, you would have never had a clue?
It's a great question. I have always been, I have always had great attention to detail, just from my military days. And so I always have an eye out for safety. Safety is the number one thing. And so not to say I didn't think about that before I got here, but there are some things in an aviation environment that you're looking at. You know, you're looking at and you're thinking about taxiways here. Can when the aircraft lands, how quick can it get from the runway to the terminal, for example? And that is through good use of taxiways and things like that. We just opened up a new taxiway probably about 12, 15 months ago. That was the number one safety project for the Federal Aviation Administration. The secretary came out and opened that.
Huh.
That increased the efficiency on the airfield by some 13%, just having that taxiway. So when a aircraft lands, they can cut through that or on that taxiway to get to the terminal. That helps decrease airfield incursions, planes clipping wings, and things mm-hmm. like that. So safety, I would point to, is something that I'm very, very acute in noticing.
Huh. And that was something you really hadn't necessarily expected coming into this job?
Well, I think that...
I mean, you would have expected it, but maybe to this level?
Well, it was a different sensitivity around safety in other jobs that I had that I ran ground transportation.
Yes, sir.
And so this is a little bit different in terms of aviation.
Wow. So one of the challenges that strikes me at DIA, because it's so big, is the challenge of getting people from the door to their gate. And you're nodding. I mean, it's just big and it gets crowded sometimes. Like, can you address that, or is it just, it is what it is?
Well, it's interesting. This airport was built for 50 million annual passengers, 50 million. Last year, we were at 78.
Oh.
This year, we're going to end the year at 82. And next year, we have forecast for 84. We created something that I call Vision 100. And this is how do we retrofit this airport to accommodate 100 million annual passengers? Keep in mind, again, that the airport was designed and built for 50.
So doubling it while maintaining a lot of it?
Doubling it, expanding it. We, as I mentioned, we opened 39 new gates. The last of those new gates were December of 2022. We just opened 14 ground load facility gates for Frontier. On AE, so loading from the ground, back, and front of the aircraft. So we are doing something that I'm not sure has been done in this country, and that is almost double the capacity of an airport while still maintaining and staying open.
I thought they shut down Stapleton because it couldn't get any bigger.
Stapleton, believe it or not, I believe their capacity was 35 million annually.
Wow. I wouldn't have guessed that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, for obvious reasons, with great fanfare 30 years ago, there was the opening of Denver International Airport, yep. And it was $50 million. You know, woohoo!
Oh, you'll never.
But
yeah,
now
yeah.
We're at 80. And so we are looking to retrofit and operate at the same time. And I think there's some inconveniences, but I think we're doing a pretty good job of it.
Wow. Now, you and I spoke before, and you know, you said that Peña Boulevard is going to have to be widened. It just is, isn't it? It's
going through an environmental process now. We do not want to predetermine what the locally preferred alternative will be. But we'll go through that process and we'll determine what that looks like.
Yeah. Let's hope so. Let's hope it's quick. So, I mean, it's amazing. And all times of day and night. All right. A couple of other questions for you. Land use. Curious, because you talked earlier about the great size of the land surrounding DIA, and now homes are being built. I always wonder, people build, or builders put homes kind of close after an airport's there, and then people complain about noise. Like, what do you do about that?
Well, let me, before I respond to that, let me just say that, you know, we're still the youngest airport in the country.
Huh.
There has not been another airport, a large airport built in this country since Denver International Airport 30 years
That's
ago.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so our footprint is just incredible. And so much credit, you know, has to be given to the Denver International Airport forefathers, if you will, for their foresight in making sure that we had room to expand.
Mm-hmm.
We have room to expand. When you look at other airports around the country, they do not have the room to expand, whether it's New York or Chicago LAX.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of land. People know that we're here. We do have noise issues. We're sensitive to that, those noise issues, and we're looking to do what we can to mitigate that.
Yeah. Now, are you feeling competition from some of the regional airports now that are trying to avoid the big hubs, you know, even like in Broomfield, where there's a, you know, regional airline that flies out of there now? Are you seeing any of that? Is that a problem for you?
It's not a problem for us.
Yeah.
And we work very, very closely with other regional airports.
You'd have to for flight patterns and such. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
We work very closely with them. We work closely with them with equipment that we are no longer using, where we can, let them have that equipment, or they can purchase that equipment or whatever.
Yeah,
we partner with them, and we don't see any impact because we see that because our numbers are increasing.
Yeah.
Despite all of that.
Yeah. Curiosity question. I want to ask you about your leadership style as we move into sort of the final phases here. But first, I want to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360. Named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 4 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is a podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Phil Washington of DIA. Go to proco360.com to subscribe to the newsletter, read my blog, link to sponsors, and catch the books I'm listening to on Audible. Okay, last one curious question that I'm going to ask you a little bit about leadership, and then we'll wrap up. How do you keep the canopies white? Like, is there a lot of maintenance involved in those things?
The canopies.
What do you call them? Yeah. What do you call them? The tents over the IA.
Yeah, the canopies. Yeah. Those canopies, they're 30 years old, first of all.
They look great.
They do look great. We do maintenance on those. We check those for structural integrity, all of those things. The material is such that it does not really fade, if you will. That is, of course, our sort of signature.
Yeah.
It sort of lends to the maintenance challenges that we have for the entire airport, but they are in good shape, and we constantly inspect those.
Got it. All right. So talk about, you talked about your background in the Army. Certainly the logistics had to help, but how is it? I mean, what is your, when you think about your role leading DIA, how do you think about leadership? I mean, you've mentioned, I saw a quote from you, you quoted General Colin Powell, whom you respect. He said, good leaders are trusted by followers. But I mean, what's your take on leadership at a high level?
Well, I think leadership is, again, one of those things that is hard to describe, but you know it when you see it. I am a situational leader. I'm an adaptive leader in terms of an adaptive leadership style. I think there are a number of things and values that I hold dear. Selfless service, integrity, honesty, trust, all of those things that really go beyond any particular profession or anything. It's just things that you do.
So you mentioned adaptive. So what yes. You've been here a while now, DIA. What's an example of something that you've adapted in your leadership style based on what you needed to accomplish?
I think decentralizing decisions is one thing. And that ties into my situational approach. You cannot always be authoritative. You cannot always be democratic. Many times it's the situation dictates my leadership style. I think that, all of these traits that I just mentioned, things like timely decision making and all of these kinds of things go into my leadership philosophy. I would also say when I was getting out of the military, and I don't think this is unusual for folks that's in uniform that are in uniform for many years, you wonder whether your military skills are transferable to the private sector or even the public sector. And I wondered about that as well until I realized that the transferable thing is leadership. And so that is the transferable skill that you can take, because the common denominator, regardless of any profession you're in, are people.
Well, the transferable nature, that's interesting because A, I think you're right. And B, it's different though, because in the military, you can ultimately rely, the structure is really based on rank and based on a pyramid. And I guess in the private sector, we don't want to lean on that so much. But I think what I've learned from my son who's in the Air Force right now is that even in the military where you have a ranking structure, that those who rely on it don't lead very effectively compared to the, right? I mean, is that?
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I mean, I think one of the things that helped me was allowing people, one, empowering people and allowing them to bring their ingenuity to the table. I've always said that I own well-intentioned failure. So if someone is indeed trying to do something and brings that initiative and they fail, I own that. I think that along with a level of empathy, a level of understanding people has helped me with my leadership journey.
Cool. One thing I was just too curious to not ask you, and that is when you were running RTD, I mean, as I look at it, this was not Denver's RTD, this was Los Angeles, right?
Mm-hmm. Los Angeles.
I look at RTDs now, wherever they are, and they all seem like a hot mess. And you went from that to running DIA, which seems like it's pretty well orchestrated. I mean, is there any similarity, or are you just happy to be done with that? I don't know.
We had challenges, when I was running the Regional Transportation District here in Denver. And also you have challenges, had challenges in Los Angeles as well. So big county, largest county in America and all of that. But I think where there is a need around infrastructure, I will probably answer that call regardless of where it is. I think that is my purpose, to help build the infrastructure in this country and repair the infrastructure in this country.
Why do you think RTDs are a mess? Many, and DIA is a highly functioning, systematic, successfully financial enterprise.
Again, I think it's the teams that we build. I really do. Now, there are some nuances when you talk about ground transportation, whether it's transit, whether it's highways, or whether it's ports or water or whatever. there's some nuances there. There's a different sets of challenges that you have. On the transit side, many of them are facing a fiscal cliff. Many of them have still not recovered from the pandemic. Ridership is a portion of what they had pre-pandemic, and they are trying to recover from that.
Well, and you've always been a successful financial model. I mean, basically, I can see as I ask that question, maybe it wasn't even a smart question to ask, because just the financial model between an RTD and an airport are just so different. Just where the sources of revenue, the ability to pay for things, just, all right, I want to take back that question.
No, don't take it back. I think it's a legitimate question. It is different financial models. On the transit side, most agencies are heavily dependent on farebox revenue. And if you are dependent on farebox revenue, but your ridership is not there, we used to call it a transit paradox, where you have a paradox where you're dependent upon farebox revenue, but the ridership has not recovered.
Yeah.
Therefore, your revenue is down and you can't put more service out. It's a transit paradox. That's what I used to call it.
Yeah, but the airports don't have that. So lucky thing for you. You get to worry about other things.
Yes.
Yeah. So you really don't really worry much about money, but there is one thing you should worry about. My last question, my last comment, the last thing you should worry about. What is with that Lucifer horse? How many people love it? How many people hate it? And does it matter to DIA?
I'm not sure how many people love it or hate it, but what I can tell you is that as long as I'm here, it's not going anywhere.
Why is that?
Because it's an iconic fixture at Denver International Airport.
It is iconic. Do you think it would be iconic if it didn't have those red eyes?
I think it would still be iconic, but that those red eyes, I try not to look at the red eyes.
All right. Hey, with that, let's wrap up. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Phil Washington, CEO of Denver International Airport. Phil, you answered all my questions. And hey, I have one last one.
Sure.
Do you ever stand in the middle of the airport, just stand there and look around and just say, oh, this is like, and just marvel at what's happening all around you?
I do that almost every day. Because I take the train out here on the A line, and I walk through the terminal to get to our building. And so, often I stand there and say, where is all these people coming from?
Wow. I can imagine that. Hey, I'm glad you were with me today. Thank you so much. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. And if you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors, Via Technologies, Kinsley Meetings, Denver Angels, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado. And oh my gosh, Phil, I kept you way too long.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. Listeners, I'm back now because Phil and I were talking after we wrapped up. It's like, we didn't actually talk about the Great Hall, and there's so much going on there. So let's talk about that, Phil.
Well, the terminal itself, we call it the Great Hall. We are working to get that done. Phase one of that Great Hall was the middle of the terminal where United and Southwest is. We finished that last year. We opened it on time and on budget, actually $25 million under budget.
What was the budget?
The budget was $700 million, I think, initially. Phase two was the new West Security. We opened that in February of 2024, and we opened that on schedule and about $20 million under budget. And now we are in the final completion phase for the Great Hall. That completion phase consists of opening up East Security, so a sort of a twin security area that will look just like the West, just across. We will open that. When we open that, we will close South Security, which is by the hotel. We will close that, and we will finish all of that up, new flooring, the brown eyebrow up top, and all of that. And that will be the iconic space or meeting space for this airport. We will have a 70-foot tall tree with Swarovski crystals that change colors. Whoa. We will have
so this isn't a real tree.
Not a real tree.
This will be like glass.
Glass. It's going to be beautiful. That will be the meet and greet area for this airport with maybe a terminal bar in that big area and concessions and that sort of thing. And then we, once we open up that east security, which will open in less than 12 months, right across from the new west security, when we open that, we will close the A bridge security. So the A bridge security that goes to the A concourses, we will close that, and people will be able to go through east or west security and walk right through to the A to concourse the A. Wow, without stopping. So
that's great. And my hope is that when you build a new concourse that you can walk to it. That's always been my thing, you know, at DIA, like that you have to take the train. No matter how much time you have, you have to take the train.
That is our plan. We will also expand the existing terminal. We will expand that to the north, and we will begin to build additional concourses off the A bridge or the A concourse, if you will, that are walkable.
Great. Wow. All right. Well, listeners, that was your update. Glad you stuck around to hear it. And I guess we'll see you at DIA, right, Phil?
Yes, we'll see you here.